tell love to you, thank whatever you. Is, you feel comfortable.
Now everybody can see me.
I'm used to standing and lecturing. My presentation today, with your permission, is approximately 30 minutes, where I would like to introduce the committee and the NGOs, delegates, to the African Children's Charter. I have brought with me copies of the charter, little booklets at the back. On the one side is the text of the charter, and on the other side is the text of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, the international treaty. And I carry one of these with me in my handbag wherever I go. I'm sure you will want to do the same. I've also brought with me from a conference I was at yesterday at the Pan-African Parliament in Midrand, with the courtesy of Save the Children Sweden, a publication on the work of the committee called Advancing Children's Rights. And it's written in very simple, easy to understand language about how the work of the committee has proceeded thus far and how civil society can get involved with the work of the committee. So, Madam, with your permission, I'll proceed to my presentation of about 30 minutes and leave time for whatever questions the people would like to ask afterwards. Thank you. The question of children's rights in the African Union is not something which is a new one. It is a matter that has preoccupied the Organization of African Unity, as it then was, since the Declaration on the Rights and Welfare of the Child in 1979. And it is also noteworthy that in the Mother Treaty, the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, which is this year 30 years old, there is also a provision on the protection of children. But my main reason for the presentation today is the only regional treaty on children in the world, the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child, which was adopted in 1990, 6 months after the adoption of the UN Convention, and which entered into force on the 29th of November 1999, once it had been ratified by the minimum number of 15 states parties. Now, just a few elaborations of the reasons for a regional treaty on children's rights. There was a feeling amongst states in Africa that Africa had been somewhat marginalized in the 10 years during which the Convention on the Rights of the Child was being drafted in Geneva. And only 4 African states participated in the Geneva process, mainly from North Africa. And there was also a feeling, which has been very well articulated in the Charter, that African values were not sufficiently accommodated in the UN Treaty. And then finally, there was a feeling that certain issues particular to Africa, notably apartheid, there is a provision in the Charter on apartheid, had not been given due recognition in the UN treaty. And so there was a unanimous agreement to adopt a treaty for African children, and this was also unanimously adopted by the Organization of African Unity on the date mentioned. Now, you will see that there was a 9-year period during which essentially the treaty lay unpromulgated because of the fairly slow number of ratifications and signatory states that signed up. So that is why there was a 9-year delay while 15 member states' signatures were required. And for some people, and there's some academic writing about this, it has been said that African states were reluctant to sign up to their own treaty, that they felt the provisions were too onerous. But that is, in fact, I believe, not the case. The 1990s was a very difficult time for Africa. It was a time of a lot of adjustment, structural adjustment. It was a time of a lot of political change, and the question of ratification of this treaty was simply not a priority. But let me just go over to the next slide. But the state of play at the moment is that 46 states have now ratified the African Charter. So the pace of ratification has sped up considerably. And that means that we are at virtually 85% ratification, because there are 53, or if you add South Sudan, 54 member states of the African Union, which means there are only a very few number of states who have yet to ratify. And I heard yesterday in Midrand that the paperwork for Swaziland, the only southern African state yet to ratify, has been prepared and only awaits the signature of the King of Swaziland. So we are working very rapidly towards universal ratification in Africa. Now, the Committee on the Rights of the Child could not be established until the treaty came into force, thereby giving life to its provisions. So the first committee was established in 2001, and this is the treaty body that oversees the implementation of the Charter. There have been several rounds of committees since 2001. In the very first committee, there was a South African. She's actually the deputy vice chancellor of my university at the moment. She wasn't then, but she was one of the first members of the committee in the committee that held office from 2001 until 2005. That's Professor Lulu Chiwula. And since then, there has not been a South African member of the committee. The committee members are nominated by their governments as independent experts, and they serve as experts in their individual capacity. It's an honorary appointment. It's not a paid job. I have my UWC faculty as my paid job. And the committee, since inception, the first few years were spent drafting rules of procedure and guidelines for state parties, and I'll come back to that, in relation to the various aspects of the committee's mandate. The committee, as is the case with the UN committee, has as one of its functions receiving state party reports on the implementation of the Charter in countries. Now, this first state party report started to come in around 2005. The first two state party reports that were considered by the committee were the state party reports of Nigeria and Egypt. To date, there are now 16 countries that have reported to the African Committee of Experts, and around 10 of those have been finalized. The most recent report received was that of Sudan, which was received at the end of last year. It's quite a lengthy process. The report has to be translated from Arabic into English and into French, which is the working languages of the committee. And the initial engagement with that report, the report of Sudan, will take place at our 18th meeting, which will be happening in Algeria. Algeria is hosting the next meeting in 10 days' time. Some of the challenges that the committee has experienced include, in the beginning, the first part of the millennium, a lack of a secretariat and a lack of resources allocated to the committee by the African Union. Things are improving slowly, but there is still a desperate need for more capacity, more research assistance, and more resources. For instance, the committee can only meet twice a year for 1 week at a time, which is very little, to consider the large number of documents and reports that are now being placed on our desk. The Charter, as many have now pointed out, sets higher standards for African countries to meet than the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. And the three issues I refer to in this particular slide are in relation to the provision dealing with child soldiers, which sets a straight age of 18 as the minimum age for recruitment of children into the armed forces. Whereas in the Convention on the Rights of the Child, due to a very contentious drafting process, the age was set at 15. There is a very important and unique provision on the question of children who are imprisoned, babies who are imprisoned, or infants, along with their mothers, which is a particular challenge in African contexts, where there are no facilities, where children who are in prison with their mothers lack access to sufficient food and nutrition in many countries, and where particular standards have been set in this unique document. And then finally, what gives the Charter its soul, what sets it apart from the UN Convention, is the provision in Article 31 referring not only to the rights and welfare of the child, but also to the responsibilities of the child. And this has become very well known on the African continent. It is something which is endorsed by African specialists. And one finds also that it is reflected in domestic legislation on an increasing basis, including in our own Children's Act 38 of 2005, which refers to the responsibilities of children. So to look briefly at the substantive provisions, which I'm just going to alert you to, because you now have a copy of the text. The provision of Article 1 is unique insofar as it sets the age of childhood at 18. Now, the CRC provides that the age of childhood is 18, except where children attain majority status earlier. And in Africa, children do attain majority status earlier when they get married, because we know about early marriage and childhood marriage. So the standard was set higher in the African Charter to ensure that children under 18, whether married or not, still enjoy the protections of the Charter. The definition of the nature of state party obligations is also unique in Article 1.3, because it refers directly to culture, tradition, religious practices, and custom, and provides that such practices, customs, traditions, cultural or religious practices that are inconsistent with the rights and duties and obligations contained in the present charter shall, to the extent of such inconsistency, be discouraged. So it is a very clear upfront statement that custom and tradition cannot trump the rights in the charter, but on the other hand, it's also a recognition that only customs and practices that are harmful must be discouraged. And it recognizes implicitly that there are also positive and beneficial customs, traditions, and cultural practices. Then the four cardinal principles, similar to the United Nations Convention, which I won't elaborate. Very important, the right to birth registration, the right to a name, and the right of a child to acquire a nationality, which has formed the basis of the first communication that has been brought to the African Committee, which I will discuss very, very briefly in a few minutes. Then one finds the usual rights and freedoms, freedom of expression, freedom of association, protection of a child's privacy, but with due regard to the African context, under reasonable supervision of parents. Provision on children with a disability, child labor, sexual abuse, socioeconomic rights, a very important provision on the right to education, which again is targeted at the African context. For instance, there's a provision in the education section which provides that girls who fall pregnant whilst at school must be allowed to continue with their education and should not be subjected to being expelled. Child soldiers I've already referred to. The section dealing with refugee children is again tailored to the African context and of a higher normative standard than the CRC, because it applies not only to children who have obtained official refugee status, which means that they have been found to be in fear of persecution in a country other than their country of origin. It applies also to children who are internally displaced, children who are migrant children, undocumented or documented migrant children, not necessarily because of a fear of persecution. There may be other reasons. It could be conflict, it could be economic reasons. So there is heightened protection for children on the move in the African context. The inter-country adoption and the adoption provisions are also provisions which reflect African concerns about children even when they have been adopted, and even when they have been adopted outside the continent. Because uniquely, the Charter provides that in domestic laws, it must be established that there is a machinery to follow up on the progress of that child after the child has been adopted. There is a unique provision again, which is being discussed in quite a lot of detail at various levels, about the use of children in begging, when mothers use a child to go to motor cars, buses, taxis, and robots to elicit sympathy and subject children often to very harmful conditions whilst they are using those children in begging. I've mentioned the children of imprisoned mothers, and I would urge you all to read the beautifully worded Article 31 on the responsibilities of the child. It is not an accident that the responsibilities clause comes at the very end. It comes after all the rights. It is complementary to the rights. It doesn't trump the rights. It doesn't provide that the responsibilities come first and the rights are second. Note also that the responsibilities clause is a summary of a clause of essentially the same nature in the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, and which of course is binding upon all peoples, including children anyway. So this is not something that was new. It has been part of the African jurisprudence already for, as I mentioned, 30 years. So when we compare the Charter with the Convention on the Rights of the Child, it is true that until now there has been a visibility bias towards the Geneva Committee. But that is hopefully changing. The committee now has finished its initial startup phases. We have our rules of procedure mostly sorted out. We have a very active committee at the moment. I'm the newest committee member. I was appointed in January this year by the heads of state of the African Union in the face of seven other nominations from African countries. So I thank everybody who might have supported my nomination, which was obviously effected by our Department of International Relations. I have a five-year term. My term will end in January 2015. It's a little bit out of sync. The other committee, new committee members, commenced in July last year. But the reason why my term is out of sync was that some years ago, one of the committee members had to abdicate her office because she joined UNICEF, and that is felt to be a position that would compromise one's independence as an expert working for either a government or for a high-profile international organization like UNICEF. So she abdicated her office, and a vacancy came around out of turn, and that unfortunately will be precipitated into the future. The committee members serve one term of 5 years. It's not renewable. And I think all of us are feeling the pressure to perform to the highest possible level in the few weeks that we have each year together and in the 5 years that we have of our term. There are at present several Southern African countries represented on the committee. There's a member from Madagascar. There's a member from Zimbabwe, a judge from Zimbabwe. There's a member from Tanzania, and then myself. And the other members of the committee come from North Africa and mainly West Africa at the moment. We see the African Charter to an extent as being complementary to the provisions of the UNCRC, although, as I've mentioned, we feel that the provisions are in many respects stronger and more tailored to the African context, and that defined distinctions are worthy of note. Now, I will talk a little bit about reporting, because that is actually the main reason for my presence here today. The committee has been fully aware from inception about the burden on countries, state parties, of reporting to both Geneva and to Addis Ababa. And so the reporting guidelines for initial reports that were drafted in the very first committee, chaired by Justice Martha Kaume, who is now a member of the International Criminal Court, provided that state parties would be permitted to submit the report they had submitted to Geneva under the CRC with an addendum or an additional report highlighting the specificities of the charter so that the committee in Addis can deal with the charter-related provisions. That has not happened ideally until now. The committee has been receiving reports, as I've mentioned, 16, of varying lengths. Nigeria's report was 180 pages and of varying quality. And certainly not any state party has managed to get that intention to submit the CRC report with an addendum correct. So we're going to be looking at drafting further guidance to state parties to achieve better harmonization and to alleviate the burden. There is a difficulty, however, is that after the initial report has been submitted, the guidelines in the charter itself, the treaty provisions, require reports every 3 years, whereas the CRC committee's timelines or periodicity is follow-up reports every 5 years. So at some point, the reports are going to get out of sync. However, that does not affect South Africa because, as the committee is fully aware, South Africa has failed magnificently to report under the CRC convention since 1997, which means we are now 4 reports behind, and South Africa has failed to even submit an initial report to the African Committee of Experts on the Rights and Welfare of the Child. That report, since South Africa ratified in the year 2000, was due in 2002 and was not submitted. The first periodic report would have been due in 2005, the second periodic report in 2008, and the third periodic report in 2011. But to date, the committee has received nothing from South Africa. The first Southern African state to report was Tanzania, and it appears that there are moves afoot in many other SADC countries, Namibia being one, Mozambique being another, to submit reports in the first half of next year. So this is a source of serious concern to the committee. The committee has sent out notes verbal to governments to remind them of their reporting obligations. And at the next session in Algeria in 10 days' time, we will be debating whether we will start to consider countries without their having submitted a report, as we are entitled to do in terms of our rules of procedure. We will then invite NGOs to come and give us an input on the state of children's rights under the charter in the respective countries. Now, I've mentioned the reporting obligation of states and then the corresponding duty on the committee to consider those reports and to give concluding observations. But that is not where our mandate ends. We have a much, much broader mandate than the CRC committee. And that includes promoting and protecting the rights and welfare of the child. In the early days, the committee went on missions to northern Uganda, where children were being abducted by the Lord's Resistance Army. The committee also undertook a mission to Angola. Funding has been a problem in this regard. The committee has very similar tasks to the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. The committee is also entitled to interpret the provisions of the Charter at the request of any state party or an institution of the African Union or any other person or institution recognized by the African Union. In this regard, we are probably going to be issuing statements or general comments, as they're called in the UN system, elaborating some of the specific provisions that I've highlighted to you today, such as the meaning of the responsibilities of the African child, the meaning of the best interests of the child in African context. And next year there will be a very large focus continentally on the issue of harmful cultural practices and non-harmful cultural practices and traditions. The fourth area of work that we are entitled to engage in is the receipt of individual communications. Now, this is similar to the mandate of the African Commission on Human People's Rights, which has been receiving communications since the early 1990s on behalf of individuals who would want to issue a complaint against the state. We have handed down, I said I would come back to this, we received our first communication in 2006, and that communication unfortunately has had to be in abeyance for some time. One reason was we did not have rules of procedure on how to consider a communication, which were then developed. The second problem was that communication was only submitted to us in English, and there was a period of 2 years before it was translated. But we will be considering that communication at our next meeting in 10 days' time. The second communication that was submitted to us was submitted by the Open Society Institute in New York, and acting with the Institute for Human Rights and Development in Africa, based in Banjul. And it was a complaint against the government of Kenya. It's called the Nubian Children case. It was a complaint regarding the descendants of Nubian soldiers who had been left behind at independence. They had fought for the British without land. And because of their landless status, they are not recognized as citizens and nationals of Kenya. This situation has proceeded for 50 years, and has resulted in those children being denied birth status, registration, and then consequentially access to health and access to education. The Kenyan government was requested to respond to this communication on three occasions and failed to do so. And therefore, at the meeting in March, the committee decided that the complaint was admissible and that we would deal with it in the absence of a response of the Kenyan government. And judgment was handed down, finding for the applicants and against the government of Kenya on the 30th of September of this year. So we are looking to expand this jurisprudence, this understanding of the meaning of the various provisions of the text of the Charter. We have a mandate to do this that the CRC committee does not yet have, and we do not intend it to be a way of only naming and shaming of governments in respect of whom a complaint or a communication has been submitted, but also as a way of highlighting what the standards are that governments must meet to fulfill their treaty obligations in respect of children. We will even admit a communication according to our guidelines from a state non-signatory to the Charter if it is in the overall best interest of the child. The conditions are set out here. They have to be written, reasoned communications. They cannot be anonymous. They must be compatible with the Constituent Act of the African Union and the African Children's Charter. They can't be based on media reports. They cannot be under consideration by another tribunal at the international level. All national appeals must have been exhausted. In the case of the Nubian children, the first case was brought in 2003 before the High Court of Kenya to give these children citizenship and nationality and birth registration. It is now 2011, and the court has failed as yet to deal with the matter at all. It just gets postponed. So there was no effective domestic remedy for those children. The language of the communication must not be offensive, and the rules unusually provide that we can invite children to participate in the consideration of any communication that we receive. We can also issue provisional measures to prevent any harm to a child that might arise while we are awaiting finalization. We mandated to undertake investigations. We have not done so yet, mainly because of the cost implications of getting the whole committee together to investigate a particular situation. But from the very inception, number six, the committee instituted the Day of the African Child, which was to commemorate the events in South Africa in 1976, so therefore to celebrate it everywhere on this continent on the 16th of June, and every year the committee selects a theme for the day's celebrations. This year, the theme of the celebrations was Altogether for Urgent Action in favor of children living on the street. Next year, the theme for the continent is going to be the rights of children with disabilities, which is again one of the reasons why I'm here today, because that is the mandate of this committee. the committee has commissioned a background paper to inform state parties and other role players, NGOs, INGOs, about the kind of actions we would like to see happening on the 16th of June. These have been in the past extremely varied: children's radio programs, seminars, conferences, speeches, and we feel it is a way in which we can popularize even further this unique event, the Day of the African Child, and get feedback from states to enable us to assess the impact. With your permission, I'll make sure that you get a copy of the briefing paper, the background document, for 16 June 2012, as soon as it is finalized at our next meeting in Algeria. Yesterday in Midrand, the Pan-African Parliament has also suggested that they would like to host a major conference on children with disabilities on the 16th of June to popularize the Day of the African Child. We are increasingly, as a committee, cooperating with the African Union Commission. The commissioner charged with gender has also been tasked as the focal point for interaction with our committee members. We are working with other partners on the forthcoming AU human rights strategy. And the last bullet there, we will be working next year with the five-year review of the Africa Fit for Children process, which started in 2001 towards the Millennium Development Goals. There was a five-year review in Cairo in 2006 and 2007, and next year is a five-year follow-up, just to make the point that the government of South Africa, along with all other African governments, will be submitting a report to the Cairo Plus 5 event. That will be a sort of statistical table of progress made towards the MDGs in respect, for instance, of education, infant mortality. But that is not a report to the African Committee of Experts. That is a report to a different process. It's a largely statistical monitoring and evaluation report, and does not constitute a report under the treaty that we are talking about now. The committee has initiated a vast interaction with NGOs. In 2008, the so-called CSO Forum was launched, hosted by the African Child Policy Forum in Addis Ababa. That is an event that was held firstly for one day, then for 2 days. This time it's going to be for 3 days, before the African Committee of Experts meeting. Many of the African Committee of Experts members attend that. Its last time was attended by 150-odd NGOs from more than 40 countries. And that is an opportunity for interaction and development of discussion between the committee and the NGOs. In addition, in our work sessions, we have public sessions. We have NGOs that come and sit, as they do in this room, and they each spend 2 or 3 minutes telling us about their work in Africa with children, from child helplines to individual NGOs working with the rehabilitation and reintegration of children who are victims of armed conflict from all over the continent. So we hear the voices of children and NGOs at every single meeting. We have noticed and are very gratified by the fact that in the country reports that have been presented thus far, the last one was Togo in February, Rwanda was before that, we have had very, very high-level government delegations, ministers, the judge president of the country, people who actually have the answers, as well as, in almost all instances, children have been brought to explain the question of children's participation in reporting processes and in various national participation events such as children's parliaments. So we are gratified by the fact that African countries take the work of the African Committee very seriously and send their very best people to deliver their report and to engage with the committee. There is a question about the location of and placement of the committee. We fall under the Department of Social Affairs in the African Union, which is not ideal. The African Commission on Human and People's Rights has a separate location. They're based in Banjul. They have their own secretariat, their own staff, their own translators, and so forth. And there has been some discussion, some high-level discussion about the African Committee of Experts moving to another location. There has been informal discussions with at least two governments who are prepared to host the African Committee of Experts, although it is a very expensive undertaking because it involves, as I say, not just the biannual meetings of the African Committee, but also a permanent secretariat consisting of people who can also provide the translation and interpretation services. The discussion about the which countries are interested in hosting the African Committee is a confidential one, but the usual rule is that if a country is prepared to host the African Committee, it should not be a country which is already hosting another structure of the African Union. For instance, Tanzania would not be considered, probably because of its hosting of the African Court in Arusha. So I must also briefly refer to the fact that the Charter is increasingly being domesticated in all the recent law reform efforts that I'm aware of: Botswana 2009, Tanzania 2009, Lesotho 2011, our own Children's Act, which came into operation last year. And this sets a 30-year framework for implementation. The UN Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Children is actively working with African countries on the issue of the violence study. Tanzania is held up as the model for having implemented a national violence study. And she's asked me to highlight her work at every possible opportunity, which I do, hence that screen that you're just seeing. And then finally, my last slide. The committee was hampered for a very long time by the fact that the general public, researchers, could not get information on the work of the committee. And that was because the website that is hosted by the African Union is completely out of date. If any of you have tried to find out anything about the African Committee of Experts, you will know that it is a fruitless task. However, that is not the case at the moment. An NGO in Geneva has set up a website for the African Committee, which is on the screen here, with all of the documentation, text of the charter, the country reports, translations of the country reports, and the deliberations of the committee meetings. So the information is now very much more accessible. And then the last website there is a website that's hosted by the Community Law Center at the University of the Western Cape on African child law reform, where one can find the texts of the acts that I've referred to: Mozambique, Swaziland is forthcoming, Lesotho and Botswana, and of course South Africa as well. And then in the African Human Rights Law Journal, which is hosted by the University of Pretoria, there have since 2005 been reports of the deliberations of the committee and the development of the CSO Forum, a kind of a history unfolding which people might want to go and look up. I don't think you need to pay anything to download the reports, which will take you right up to the discussions that took place at the 16th and 17th meetings. So, in conclusion, I hope that I will have persuaded the members of the committee, the chairperson, that South Africa needs to engage much more fully with the provisions of the treaty. We want to have a particular focus on Southern Africa. There is much more interaction between the committee and states in West Africa, in French-speaking Africa, and that is the reason why I would like to encourage the committee to read the text of the charter, to ask governments where the report is, what has been done about it, so that South Africa is not placed in the embarrassing situation of having the most progressive children's rights clause in a constitution in the world, which is now being copied by some of our African partners such as Kenya, and yet in the situation that even countries as little as Namibia and Mozambique, and as poor as, very, very poor these days, as Swaziland, can come to the party, whereas we can't get a report together. So thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Prof, for the presentation. You have actually shared information with us on the rights and welfare of children. And it's really unfortunate that South Africa is such a democratic constitution. Cannot function as it's expected. But I think, I'm sure all of us, as we have come to us, will work together to see that at the end of the day, South Africa performs it as it's expected to do. And secondly, I would like to congratulate you for your appointment. Keep up the good work that you are doing and represent us in the AU and in the whole Africa. I think I will now get to the members. If ever there are any points of clarity, any discussions, any questions that they would like to throw to you. So over to you, members. Seke.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Prof, too. And let me also join the Honorable Chair in congratulating you to be a member, hoping that we will work with you and just to advise us in future as this committee, because we are a committee working with the children in Parliament. And we are also working with provinces and other municipalities just to change the lives of the children out there. I think you'll be able to assist us in that regard. And Chair, the other thing, I think we are aware of the non-reporting by the country with regard to the outstanding reports on the ACRWC. I think we've raised it even in our budget debate in February to the Ministry of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities. But the latest information that we have from that ministry is that the report is ready, but it's in cabinet. So we are looking forward to interact with the department with regard to the details of the report. And I think we'll also engage you further in that way. And thirdly, Chair, on the issue of the background paper with regard to the celebration of the African Child, I think the committee will appreciate that information so that we can be able to get more information regarding the theme that you have highlighted for next year, because I don't think that you are doing good with regard to children with disability. We've been having the oversight tours around this country, and there are challenges that are faced by children with disabilities. So I think in that way, if we can get that background or the concept document so that we can be able to prepare ourselves as this parliament so that we can be able to celebrate this day, and also to in our constituencies too, I think we can be able to assist in that regard. I think this should not be a once-off event because we are supposed to educate our people about their rights and responsibilities. I think we'll appreciate that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tsiki. Any other person? Similarly, there are no questions or chairperson?
Thank you, Chair. Let me also join the queue in congratulating you on your appointment. My first other question would relate to as to when and where do you interact with social development, because they are also working with children. So what is the kind of relationship, you know, that you would have with them? And I could not agree more with you to say, you know, unadopted children, I think there's a need for monitoring. Because I remember even when we went out doing our oversight, there were a lot of dissatisfaction about these adopted children, and others who were not monitored. You know, there was no monitoring, and it was just awful the way they were looked after, because they are just being dumped there, and no one ever make a follow up to say as to whether this is. So I think you are right. We do need. We need that follow up. And then also, like my colleague said, we will continue to do a follow up on the report, on the council's report, so that it gets submitted. Yeah, I think that's.
Okay, Professor, there's a hand there. Let me take the hand, and then you'll answer. The question, both questions. Over to you.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Good morning, Professor. I'm sorry I'm late. I was not here when you started with your presentation. Therefore, I don't know whether I'll be taking you back by asking I need some clarification. Point number one, I would like to know, are you based at UWC as a committee?
The committee consists of 11 independent experts who are elected by the heads of state of the African Union in their personal capacity. They serve as individuals. No country may have more than one representative on the committee. In the very first committee that was established under the Charter in 2001, South Africa did nominate a committee member who was served until 2005, and since then South Africa has not nominated anybody until this year, when a vacancy arose and I was nominated by the Department of International Relations. Mm-hmm. But I serve in my personal capacity, and the committee meetings are generally in Addis Ababa at the African Union, except where a country offers to host a meeting, which has happened once before. It happened in Cairo in 2007 when the government of Egypt hosted the committee for the November meeting, and it will happen again now in November when the government of Algeria will be hosting the meeting. I believe also the government of Nigeria has wanted to host the meeting, but there are quite a lot of logistical things that have to happen, and they didn't do that in time, so that will probably happen next year. So we don't have a seat as such, certainly not at the University of the Western Cape, but that is one of the discussions that's ongoing as to whether we should have a permanent seat outside of Addis Ababa to fulfill both the secretarial functions better, so that we have our own secretariat, as does the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, our own researchers who can assist us with our work. But that is obviously an expensive undertaking for a country to host the committee, not the committee, which only meets twice a year at this stage, but to host the support staff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My second question is that the committee, what does the committee do? Does it monitor the charter, or what exactly is the committee doing? Because my concern and my more interest is that Africa today is the gateway for child trafficking, and I don't know, how do you gather that kind of information, if you have different countries or in a certain, in each and every country you have NGOs that you are working with, and so how do you gather your information? Thank you.
What about you, Prof? And you'll answer that other one on social.
Thank you very much. I'll start with the last question. In fact, the committee has a practice, as I mentioned earlier, of much more extensive engagement with NGOs and in issuing invitations to NGOs to further its own understandings and its own work. Africa is a vast continent and things are not the same everywhere. In 2006 or 2007, the committee hosted a professor of psychology, I think, from West Africa, who came and gave us a very comprehensive report on rehabilitation of and reintegration of trafficked children in the region. And at the next session coming up, we have invited an NGO from Mozambique, which specializes in human trafficking and children's trafficking, to come and also give us a briefing. So we take active steps to find out what is happening in relation to the issue that you mentioned, for instance, in different parts of the continent. And of course, we address trafficking and many other issues, children living on the street, children in the juvenile justice system, through our engagement with governments when they come to present their country reports to us. We would welcome the opportunity to engage with this government when they do submit a report and then are invited to come engage with us. Similar to this, to the process that happens in Geneva, we don't only listen to governments. We also, when we consider a country report, we have a shadow report or an alternative report, which we ask NGOs from the country to submit to us, and they have been very, very willing and able to do so. So we do have different sides and perspectives to consider when we deal with particular issues. So I hope that answers that question. Yes. The question about engagement with the social development, I would very much welcome an opportunity to brief the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. I've had not enough interaction since we completed the Children's Act. I was a member of the Law Commission Project Committee established by the Minister of Social Development in 1997 that worked on the drafting of South Africa's Children's Act. And I was also the consultant that was contracted in 2007 to draft the regulations to our Children's Act. So I personally, in my personal capacity, have worked quite extensively with both the Department of Social Development in the process around the drafting of the Children's Act and the implementation of it, and I've also worked with Parliament, as it then was, when the regulations and the Act were being finalised, but that was a while ago, and I would very much welcome an opportunity to update the Portfolio Committee about the African Charter, and about anything else they would like to hear about in relation to the work that I do. In relation to the reporting, about a month ago, I received a report that was purported to be a report to the CRC committee, which was never sent to the CRC committee, and it's dated 2007. It now cannot be sent to the CRC committee because it's old. It's completely out of date. It refers to the Children's Act, which was still under development. It refers to the Child Justice Act, which was then still a bill. Now, if that is the report that is being referred to, it's useless. It's useless. In fact, I printed it out and put it in a file and put it in my cupboard. There are 3 million more child support beneficiaries now than there were in 2007. The age cohort at which children can receive the child support grant has changed. So a new report, if that is the report they're referring to, a new report is needed. And everybody I have spoken to, and I know almost everybody in the field, assures me there is no report. And my understanding is that the department which must prepare the report is this department that this committee has oversight of. So my proposal would be that you request insight into what the report says, if there is in fact a report before Cabinet. In many countries, that I'm aware of, it does not need to be the case, but in many countries that I'm aware of, the sector, the NGO sector, has been consulted about the preparation of the report. Children have been consulted in the preparation of the report. In fact, members of my own committee have been requested to give advice to their own governments in the preparation, not prepare the report for government, but say, come along and just tell us if this is okay in the beginning. That those processes have not been set in place, if they are to happen. And it's an opportunity that this committee could seize to make children's rights visible, to involve children, including children with disabilities, in these processes, as is happening so spectacularly in some other parts of the continent. And I refer again to the Tanzanian study that has just been released with children participating, which has been submitted to the UN Secretary General on violence against children in New York. I can refer also to the study that was done in Zanzibar, tiny little poor country, where they attained complete penetration of every single village and district involving children in the preparation of a report about their rights. So these are opportunities that are not happening here. Thank you. It's a long answer, I know.
Thank you, Professor. Before we close, Chair, I don't know whether you have got some words that you'd like to say to the Professor as we close.
Let me express our sincere gratitude and appreciation. I think we have really learned a lot from your presentation, and it has been actually opening some avenues. And I hope this is not the end. Let us call it the beginning, because as you said, it's important that there's a committee, you know, we work with NGOs, civil society. There is no way that the committee alone can do it. So I also believe that even in the report, this, that is going to be, you know, sent by the department, it will be all inclusive, let alone the, you know, the shadow report by the NGOs. Otherwise, I really wish to thank you, Professor, and wish you well in your position. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Prof, I think with these words from the Chair, we are now closing the meeting, and we'll make a follow-up on the recommendation that she has said to see as to how can we assist you and assist the country in the avenue of reporting. I declare the meeting adjourned.